Christmas, everybody. It is New Year's Eve here on the Mark Steiner Show, of course, everywhere around. I mean, did I say New Year's? I mean, Christmas Eve.
Okay.
That's the voice of our guest this hour, Edward Palachuk.
You pushed me a week too late in my life. Time goes by fast enough.
Christmas Eve.
Yes.
Somebody's Eve.
Ed
Palachuk, of course, music director of the Lincoln Symphony Orchestra in Nebraska, but he's a Baltimore boy, artistic director of Concert Artists of Baltimore, and in his 34th year on the faculty of Peabody Institute of Music, whatever they call it these days.
The Peabody Institute of Music of the Johns Hopkins University. Yes, absolutely. And I can't believe I've been here that long.
I know, man.
It's well over half my life now. I mean, I should say I started when I was three.
Well, you were three, I was five.
Yeah. There you go. So, of course, they can't see us. This is radio, but I can describe us as being, you know, two of the most handsome, youthful-looking gentlemen in Baltimore, in B-more. And Merry Christmas. What a wonderful way to really reach out to our listeners and say, wish them all the most beautiful blessings that this season has to offer. So it's a Merry Christmas. It is Christmas Eve, and it's a Merry Christmas for
and
everyone.
You love Christmas.
I adore Christmas. Christmas is a special time for so many reasons. I mean, growing up in a small town outside of Scranton, PA, where we had, you know, just north of the Poconos, a ton of snow constantly, brings back a lot of really quite beautiful memories of what that this holiday has always been about. And as I've gotten older, it's become more of a season of, more than ever, of giving than it ever has in my life, because most of my time is really taken up in creating some of the most beautiful music that's seasonal, that's ever been written for an entire year. You know, so I consider myself one of the luckiest people I know, Mark, because I get to do what my passion is in life, and I'm able to make a living at it. It's amazing.
And share it with everybody
else. Tis the season.
And what we're listening to, Jesus, Jesus, Rest Your Head, is mm-hmm. with the Concert Artists of Baltimore.
It is indeed. And it's a lovely arrangement that I came across a few years back. And we, next season, will be coming out with a Christmas album. And so, actually, I'm previewing it a little bit now.
So this will be on the album.
Yeah, this will be on the album coming out next,
oh, wonderful.
Next season. So, and it's just one of my favorite kind of off-the-beaten-path type of carols. It's actually a Southern Appalachian carol.
The one we just heard.
The one we just heard. Yeah, very beautiful. Very beautiful. Very simple and very beautiful.
So you've been with Contours for a long time now.
We're in our 26th season now. We started in 86, 87, and last year was our 25th anniversary year. To me, that's just amazing that over a quarter of a century of my life has been devoted to something that I created, and that's very exciting. That's also why I feel so wonderfully wedded to Baltimore, because it's where I weaned myself into the really top professional world of music through the BSO, through the Peabody,
right.
through founding my own organization, Concert Artists of Baltimore, and it's like the hub of my life. So I'm very close to the BWI downtown where I live in Butchers Hill. I have one of the nicest homes, I think, in all of Baltimore. I'm so thrilled to be living in that neighborhood. Right off Patterson Park. My neighbors are all my family. It's wonderful. And to be able to just in a hop, skip, and jump be on a plane and go anywhere in the world where my music takes me, it's just, you know, it's a beautiful life. It's a wonderful
life. It's a
life.
I knew that was coming. No, you have. You've done a lot. And you're now also the maestro at Lincoln Symphony Orchestra mm-hmm. in Lincoln, Nebraska.
I can't believe that I've actually been there now for 15 years.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, and in fact, you know, I gave up my post as associate and director of Baltimore Symphony Chorus on the BSO staff. It's now 15 years. I couldn't believe that, because I was talking to someone just recently. I said, oh, you know, about that happened about 7 or 8 years ago. And they said, really? And I said, actually, it couldn't have, because I haven't been on staff for over 10 years. So it was at that time that was the main reason why I had to relinquish that post. I wanted to become my own maestro of a symphony orchestra, and I'm having a blast there. You know, in many ways, Mark, I'm still on honeymoon out in Lincoln.
That's good.
It's fantastic. Lincoln is a community which is growing in leaps and bounds. They've been rated one of the top 10 cities in the small cities in the United States to raise a family. The unemployment is below 1%.
Below 1%?
Yeah, it's 0.0. It's 0.4 something.
Wow.
I think. Yeah, it's amazing. It's been that way for most of the time. It's the capital. It's the university town. Their public school system is one of the best in the country. Low drugs, low crime, you know, so they say it's like the all-American family, one of the, you know, all-American wow. family cities. And I'm having a blast. And the people out in Lincoln realize the importance of their symphony orchestra. So it's been easier, actually, an easier ride for me out there, even though it keeps me very busy. In terms of raising money, getting public awareness into their arts, into their local symphony. And we stay very much in the trenches out there. You know, we're into the schools constantly. We're out into the pub. We do free concerts. All of that stuff is very important if you want your community to take ownership in you, you have to be actively involved in your community. Another one of my favorites. It's a spiritual type thing, you know, kind of gospel, kind of spiritual.
I love this.
Let the tiny baby.
More concert artists, right?
It's for that's concert
next year's
artists.
Christmas album.
Next year's Christmas album. Yeah, a lot of fun. What I love about concert artists, I founded it this way, is that I have the capability with this organization to do purely orchestral music, purely choral music, and purely just chamber music, small stuff. And I can also just combine all those forces when I need to, which I do, of course, on many occasions. And we even get bigger than because we expanded the professional realm of the chorus into the symphonic chorale. When the symphony chorus went defunct, we garnered right. a lot of those people back, and we've done everything from Beethoven 9 through Vaughan Williams' Dona Nobis Pacem or the Verdi Requiem, some of those bigger works. And last season, I closed Peabody's and Concert Artist season with the Bernstein Chichester Psalms and the Orff Carmina Burana at the Lyric Theater. What a kick. I mean, I think I had over 200 in the chorus, along with my professionals, and about 150 in the orchestra. And wow. So it really, we blew the roof off the place. We had a great amazing. Time.
Yeah, have you ever brought them to Nebraska? Brought them to Nebraska?
No, I haven't. And I have to tell you, I mean, out in Nebraska, I have the availability, I should put it that way, of doing any kind of large choral orchestra work I want. Last year, I closed my season with Britten's War Requiem.
Oh, I love that.
Unbelievable. One of my favorite hard. You know, I had about 350 in the chorus for that one. There are two orchestras on stage. I brought one of our soloists from Baltimore, Janice Chandler Etime.
Janice. Oh, she's amazing.
She's amazing.
At Morgan State University, right here.
She was my soprano soloist.
She's amazing.
Just fabulous. Blue. And we even had the American Boy Choir up in the balcony with an organ. It was just an amazing thing.
Wow.
I think it hadn't been done since the 1960s sometimes when Robert Shaw had been out there to do it. So it was time to do it. And it made a real statement, too. That's quite a heavy piece. It's a real, real anti-war piece.
Oh, no, it is.
Tremendous.
One of my favorite pieces.
Yeah.
I didn't know you did that.
Yeah.
That's an amazing feat as a conductor to put all that together.
And I got it on
in
DVD.
Lincoln, Nebraska?
I know. Yes, I know. It was like the heartland. They didn't know what they were in for when they hired me out there.
I love it. This is wonderful.
Having a great time.
So we're about to hear a new piece, I think, on the list. I've just been seeing our list. You'll have to tell us about this as we bring it in. Remember, O Thou Man?
Oh, another spiritual. It's like a bluesy, a very smoky piece based on the text, Remember, O Thou Man.
Should we hear some of it?
Oh.
Come back. Lovely. This is, again, from your Christmas album coming out next year.
That's true. Now, unusual.
What is this piece?
Remember, O Thou Man. It comes from a collection of what's called Christmas spirituals. I think very, very, not just accessible, but very clever and very heady intellectual arrangements of these old tunes. That's based on a spiritual, an old spiritual melody that they put religious words to. I find it hauntingly beautiful. Difficult to do, but that's the beauty of having a professional group. That I always like to think, in some sense, that I've helped to carry on the mantle of the great Robert Shaw.
Yes.
Who is one of my absolute idols.
You do, though.
And it's very important to me to be able to do both the orchestral and the choral, because I think that when you think about it, Mark, just about every single great composer dealt with both. Even if it's a primarily instrumental composer, you're going to find choral work in there, and or vocal work of some sort. And I think that one of the big mistakes that happened in our society was the separation of the vocal and the instrumental. And you know, the camps went either into the orchestral or into the choral. And I think one of the things that Shaw did was to bring those two camps together and show that how important that is. I mean, he created in Atlanta one of the greatest of all symphonic choruses in the world, and all the recordings that he put out with that, with the Atlanta Symphony and the Atlanta Symphony Chorus, I think they all won Grammys. I mean, they were just all spectacular. So it's a legacy that, you know, is impossible. No, we'll, I don't, we'll never see that again in one person. But I do like to think that I helped to carry out some of his mission, you know, of and that's what it was. Shaw went all over the country, in fact, really all over the world, but particularly in this country, conducting the Britain War Requiem. That was one of his pieces. It was a statement for him musically as well as politically. And I think that...
for you as well, my guess is.
Yes, right? It is. And I have to tell you that even this year, earlier this year, when this month... leading up to Christmas with that terrible tragedy that happened up in Connecticut. I don't usually mix forums or arenas, but in this case I did. And I did talk to the audience about the importance of getting rid of guns, period. We don't. I don't see the need for them. I never have, and I never will. Bernstein was that way, too. Lenny would, you know, talk constantly about, you know, what's the need for all of these atom bombs and destroyers and aircraft carriers? Put all our weapons down. And when they come to our shores, what are they going to do if we just say, you know, come on up for a latke?
For a latke. You know? A latke and a vodka.
And a latke and a vodka. There you go. But I think it's very poignant at this time of the year when tragedies like that happen, to make our message be heard, you know. And if I can do that through music, then I will feel that I've been somewhat successful in my lifetime.
And I think you do that, and you work, and that, I think that artists bring that to us. You know, that's part of the role and act of an artist is to do that, and that's why so many artists lean in that direction.
That's true.
Have that
it's
feeling
true.
In their hearts and souls.
It is true. And let's face it, Mark, it has been proven beyond any doubt the importance of art, music in particular, but arts and fine arts in education for the development of the brain of children, the brains of children. They need that. Perhaps if this poor Adam in school up in Connecticut had more of an artistic core to hang on to, he may not have flipped out. One doesn't know. Right. But I do know that a lot of artists, and I would include myself in this, have a strange kind of mental makeup. Our minds work differently. We're a little more. We do tend to be eccentric, if not eclectic. I mean, we in many ways we have to in order to get into the heart of our art. You have to take a different approach. You can't take a common approach. It's not just an algebra problem or puzzle. It's something beyond that. So I think that those personalities that are drawn to the fine arts, as you said earlier, tend to have that leaning.
Right.
And I think that that's very arts are the thing that soothe the savage beast. It's the civilizer of man. Without art, And when the arts do tend to erode or corrode, it's usually an indication that that particular civilization is decaying from within. I mean, it's happened in the Egyptian. You look at all the civilizations. When the art went down, that was the end of it. It was the barometer for it.
No, absolutely. I think that's absolutely true.
So here we are, you know.
The night before Christmas.
It was the night before Christmas. There you go.
Is this your group again?
It is indeed. I should mention also that our pianist for these is Clinton Adams, who's on the faculty.
Oh, yeah.
And phenomenal.
Lovely
pianist.
Man.
Yeah. Great. Brilliant man. Brilliant man.
Let's hear some more at the Concert Arts of Baltimore. Before Christmas, and we're here with Ed Polacek, and we're going to take a very brief break and let you play a little night, Twas Night Before Christmas, and come right back with Ed Polacek. Don't go away.
Thank you.
Bach, Edward Palachek, in the studio Christmas Eve. Artistic director of Concert Arts of Baltimore. He founded 26 years ago. Music director of Lincoln Symphony in Nebraska. 34th year's faculty member of the Peabody Institute. And more. I list the rest, then that's all we would do, and we wouldn't have a show.
Besides which, that and $1.50 will get you a right, cup of coffee, right? Honestly, I love the life of the anticipation that is basically constant, because you're always working towards something new, even if you're repeating repertoire, which is an amazing thing to me. For example, every year now, for 30-some years, I guess it's been, I've done the Messiah with the BSO.
Right.
And for some reason, it is never, ever the same. Even though I don't change my version, I keep pretty much the version the same from year to year. But the soloists change. Somehow the piece itself continues to evolve, which is a real testimony to the genius of Handel. Once again this year, earlier this month, we did a Messiah that, you know, everybody is saying that it was one of the most exciting performances they ever heard. And I have to admit that I thought it was brilliantly played and sung. Just, you know, it was a real privilege to be able to be part of that thing. And one of my favorite moments is at the very end, when it comes to that crashing silence, and that silence is just deafening before the final amen. And then we sing and play the final amen, and people are up screaming on their feet before we even cut off. It's like a rock concert.
And that's great.
It's such I don't know, I find it so inspiring that people are so moved by that, by the power of that music, that they respond in that fashion. It's great.
It's an amazing piece. Who are your soloists this year?
This year I had, well, they're from all over. I had a Russian soprano, Yulia Van Doren. I had Abigail Nims as our mezzo. And they came from all over the world. Sean Panikkar, an Indian tenor, and just an exquisite voice. And Tyler Duncan was our bass baritone soloist. They knocked it out of the ballpark. It's always great going back to the BSO, because that was my home for so many years, for decades. And even though a number of the personnel have changed, it still feels like home to me. So, you know, walking out on the stage of the Meyerhof to me is like coming back home, you know. And
I'm glad you're still doing it.
Yeah. Jonathan Carney, you know, we've just had a fantastic relationship, and it's continued over the years. So I feel very blessed by that.
Let's finish up a little Bach. Is it still there? Still there? Done? I think it's done.
Wow!
I thought we'd come back a little bit more before we were done. Yeah. Oh well. So we'll just have to do something else.
I have to go to Bach to something else. Sorry.
What should we go?
I want to take that one back, actually, Bach.
That's such a beautiful piece.
Christmas Oratorio is, you know, he Bach had this amazing ability to somehow, with such economy of means, because it was Baroque. It was, you know, some strings, couple of winds, mm-hmm, a few voices, you know. And if he wanted to build it up, he'd throw a few trumpets in and a timpani, and all of a sudden it sounds like the universe opens up. And I guess, first of all, of course, he was one of the greatest geniuses that ever lived. But aside from that, he probably also felt that he had to constantly impress the congregation at St. Thomas Church in Leipzig, who were all constantly complaining about one thing or another. You know, it was too long,
right,
it was too loud, it
right,
was, you
right,
know, not enough, it was too much, you know, my God. It was like, they sounded like, you know, they were a congregation of Jackie Masons.
It could be
a little bit more of this, but not too much of that, and then maybe it could be this.
Maybe that's the madness that made him, that's why he had so many kids.
There were no stops on his organ. at the church.
I think it's time for Tchaikovsky.
Okay, I think I better go there. Now that I've dug that hole, I think I'm never going to be able to crawl out of that one. Uh-oh.
Hey, Lord have mercy. It's Christmas Eve.
It's Christmas Eve, and what would Christmas season be like without the Nutcracker? You know, I was thrilled once again this year that the Moscow Ballet used concert artists as their orchestra at the Hippodrome. Now, unfortunately, I was out conducting other Christmas concerts, so I had my assistant conduct it down there. Lee Mills, an extremely talented, frighteningly talented conductor that I think we're going to hear some great things from in the future. And so we had another big success. We were all over the place this season. It's great.
That is good. That is wonderful. I think I'm very proud of you, what's going on here, and for us. It's here.
I just love this. I can't help it. I never grow tired of this. And I think it's a real... Obviously, the public doesn't either. They want to hear it year after year after year,
yeah.
Which is an amazing thing. I mean, it's a real testimony to the genius of some of these composers, you know, and you can't refute it. Bach, Tchaikovsky, Handel. I mean, they are seasonal, you know. And actually, they're year-round because we hear them in
all
other
the time,
things.
But...
Yeah, but... We can't seem to live through a Christmas holiday season without sharing in this, and it's a beautiful thing because it in many ways it's very non-religious. You know, it's just a secular story that's really quite quite beautiful and quite magical.
Hearing this now, I was just thinking that when you listen to the Nutcracker play, you can hear what the composers of popular Christmas music, White Christmas, other things, what they were thinking, what was underneath of them as they were composing.
Because it's all a building process, you know, and so we fall back onto those standards that we know so well. Earlier when we heard that 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, that's such a 1940s, you know, thing.
Yeah.
That's when it was written, and it still has that flavor. And yet it is is still so innocent and so charming. You can't help but just love it. You know, it's really great stuff.
You conducted this?
Yes. Oh, yes. This is one of my favorite scores. You know, he was known. He became known as a ballet composer. I mean, he wrote obviously tons of other things, and they're all not all, but most of his stuff is truly great. Like his last three symphonies, 4, 5, and 6, the Pathétique. But Nutcracker, Swan Lake, and Sleeping Beauty, even as, you know, I don't know how, I don't want to denigrate it by saying because it's ballet music that it's second rate. I think what Tchaikovsky did was he elevated the music of the ballet to such a high standard that it was beyond just ballet music, but it was great symphonic art.
So, this is not really a Christmas Eve question, but I'll ask anyway. Before we go back to our music, so what do you think were the best recordings of Tchaikovsky's 4th, 5th, and 6th?
Wow. You know, it depends on... It really depends on what you're listening for and what you want. And I'll answer that question this way. We have become a somewhat homogenized society. And I think that over the last several decades, because of the way politically things have gone, and we have to be so PC about things, that we've watered down our expectations, or everything has to be basically pretty much the same. We can't do certain things, we can't say certain things, we can't allow certain things to happen, so we all fit into this, like, box. This we're forced into an arena, and we have to stay there. And it's happened in the arts in many ways too.
Right, right.
The sounds of orchestras are basically all the same now. You know, it's very difficult to know whether you're listening to the Cincinnati Pops or the Royal Philharmonic.
Right, 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 right.
I have some recordings from Lincoln, Nebraska, that I've played for people, and they thought it was a European orchestra, Bamberg or something. I mean, you just nowadays it's more difficult to tell. What I miss more than anything are the personalities, and we don't have those giants the way we used to. We have them in a few people who are still alive today: James Levine, Riccardo Muti, Daniel Barenboim.
I love Daniel Barenboim's work.
But we still don't, we're lacking the personalities of yesteryear, like Fritz Reiner, Eugene Ormandy, Leonard Bernstein, Charles Münch, Seiji Ozawa. You could listen to one of those recordings and say, oh my God, that's Boston. You know, oh my God, that's Reiner with Chicago. Oh my God, that's Bernstein with New York Phil. That's got to be Philadelphia Orchestra with Eugene Ormandy. We don't hear that anymore. So when you ask me a question like, who are my favorite recordings of the 4th, 5th, 6th?
We could be here for days.
Right, because it's a personality thing.
Right.
You know, and Rozhdestvensky, Kondrashin, some of those great Russian conductors, they're you can't beat those recordings of those, but you also can't beat like Ormandy's recording of with the Philadelphia Orchestra for that, just that sound and the personality that he put into it. So if I had to answer it, I'd say my own recordings. If you really twist my arm.
I love it.
It's a wonderful life.
So, I may be mispronouncing this, but we're about to hear something called Trepak?
Trepak.
Trepak.
Absolutely. You'll recognize this the moment you hear it. Everybody will. From Nutcracker.
Oh, from Nutcracker.
Yes. The Trepak.
Right. Let's listen. As soon as it queues up, we'll... here we go. Thank you.
Great stuff.
Really good stuff. You know, it's funny when I said, it was Trey Park. I'm thinking, you know, Trey Park, Tupac, what did he bring? I wasn't sure what you were.
A six-pack.
Six-pack.
I brought a six-pack with me.
A little slow on the uptake here today. Christmas Eve, I'm sorry.
It's been a long season, hasn't it? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. Have another drink, lad.
Yeah, there, just to fill it up again, the British Stein.
But if you do drink, don't drive.
Right. Amen. That's a very important thing.
Keep yourself and the rest of us safe.
That's right.
And enjoy your family this Christmas Eve.
What a, you know, it's such a special time. I know, you know, we're heading up onto the 6 o'clock hour, but
real time.
Yeah, but it's it. When I mean, obviously, it's, this time of the year is such a time of the year for children.
Yes,
the innocence of, and the beauty of a child's face and expectation and soul and anticipation are things that are just priceless. That's what it's all about. And finding, I think, the child in us all, the kid in us all, that's what this season, I think, does for us. It brings us back. It waters our roots. It gives us a little bit of time to step back from the craziness of life and say, I remember when, you know, and then you see it. You see it in the eyes and the faces of children, and it's a very, very beautiful time of the year.
I've always loved Christmas. I mean, it's the whole season, you know, and all the ways we celebrate it, whether it's those who celebrate the solstice, you know.
The solstice.
Valerie and I have a tradition. We give every solstice morning and give each other a present. That's what we've always done, you know. And Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and the
exactly.
Happy New Year and...
And so it goes, and keep and it's the season that keeps on giving.
And you've been giving this to us for many years now. We've been doing this Christmas specials together.
I wouldn't miss this for the world, Mark. This is you know, it's part of being in Baltimore. It's part of life. It's part of the season. You have to do this, and I wouldn't miss it for the world. It's such a great grand opportunity, also, because now it's over for me. You know, I mean, the mad rush.
It's time for you to go to Pennsylvania and be with your family.
That's right. And go up to Pennsylvania for some homemade pumpkin pie.
Oh, that sounds good. Bring some back home.
I will.
So you're going to take us now to Poulenc?
Poulenc.
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 A wonderful 20th century composer who didn't have a huge output but had a tremendous impact on a lot of 20th century other 20th century composers, a style that is totally his own. Like the other great composers of the 21st century, he had his own language. When you hear something, you say, that's Poulenc. It can be no other composer. And I believe we're going to hear the last two, maybe, of his four Christmas motets.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to hear.
Vidente Stelam, which is about the shepherds coming to the manger, and or watching the star, and the wise men following, everybody following the star to the manger, and the last one, Hodie Christus Natus Est, on this day Christ is born.
So we hear them both.
Thank you.
almost, it's really gorgeous. It's an amazing piece.
Almost static, really quite haunting, you know. I talking about the, you hear it, Magi, the Magi, following the star along with the shepherds. It's just a, I always found it fascinating the way a composer would discover his or her own kind of musical language and then be able to create the aural painting of the text. And I think it's very telling when a composer is able to write a cappella music.
Mm-hmm.
Because there, I think therein lies some of the most challenging. I would say for a composer, the most challenging aspects of writing would be writing for chorus a cappella and on the vocal side, and writing string quartets on the instrumental side. If you can master those two types, I think you can then go beyond whatever you need, because you have all of your technical, harmonic, rhythmic, voicing, compositional skills in place at that point. You know, and for some it's just natural. I mean, I don't even think they give it a thought as to what they're doing. Others, it's probably very calculated, but that always fascinated me to see the way composers would do it. You know, you hear a Mozart Requiem, and you get to the Dies Irae, the Day of Wrath, and you go, "Oh my gosh, it's, you know, it's just going to tear me apart." And you think, "How could it ever be greater?" Then you get to Verdi, and you hear his Dies Irae, and you think, "You know, you've gone to hell and back," or just to hell and you've stayed there. It's terrifying. And for that matter, we were talking about the Britain War Requiem, the way he sets the Dies Irae, you know. So we get to this time of the year, and we think of certain texts, like Hodie Christus Natus Est,
what we're about to hear now. And we are actually at the end, and we're
We are. Oh my gosh!
And we'll bring this music up. And Merry Christmas to you, Ed Polacek,
and to you, Mark, and to all of our listeners.
Merry Christmas to everybody.
Peace and health, more than anything, and happiness for the new year.
Have a lovely Christmas. Leah Gilmour's coming up next at the top of the hour to share her Christmas Eve specials with you. And love you all. We love you, Ed. Good. Thank you for coming in one more time.
Cannot thank you enough. Thank you.
Music director of Lincoln Symphony, artistic director of Concert Artists of Baltimore, 34th year on the faculty of Peabody, a dear friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Merry Christmas, folks.
Merry Christmas.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. For WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.